You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, we finally, finally did it. Just in time for the Ticats' big home-and-home series with the Ottawa Redblacks, we, the geniuses that we are, released a new T-shirt design that is sort of inspired by, I think we could fairly say, our new big rival. I think the Ottawa-Hamilton rivalry is pretty intense. It's a slapdick shirt, and it is in the font of the Ottawa Redblacks, and it is now available over at our merchandise store. Mike, there's no way we're going to get in any trouble for this, is there?
No. So far, if we see the reactions like online so far, it hasn't been too bad. There's been a couple of Redblack fans comment, but they were laughing about the thing. So, you know, no anger yet from Redblacks Nation, but I'm hoping to see a little bit come our way. Just a little bit. I mean, that's an ultimate troll move by us, I'd say.
Oh, my God. It was maybe the biggest troll move than any. Like, this is a fun rivalry.
Yep.
I don't like Ottawa. I think everyone knows that. I think I've been pretty clear about that. It was too hard to pass up, right?
Yeah.
But Mike, that's not the only one. We can't forget our roots here, and before there were slapdicks, we had Bozos, and now we have our very own Bozo shirt out now as well. This one is done in the font sort of reminiscent of the team that we just beat last Friday down the QEW, the Toronto Argonauts. So, I mean, we're basically just here to piss everyone off, aren't we?
Yeah, and listen, the rivalry isn't as ramped up as the Ottawa one, because of recent years, you know, minus last year when Hamilton was kind of out of it by Labor Day. There's been a pretty intense rivalry between Ottawa and Hamilton. It's been fun. And I think that it's going to get, you know, to a level that we haven't seen before in the next couple of weeks and then into the playoffs possibly if we play them. So, you know, we're just trying to do our part to ramp up that robbery.
Of course, that's what we're here for. But we're also here for fun. So, Mike, let's move on. And let's move on to this past week's game. I just talked about it a little bit a second ago. But the Ticats went into BMO Field and beat down the Argos on Friday night by a score of 34-20. This game was close early on. The two teams traded field goals and then touchdowns in the first two drives. But then the Ticats offense started clicking and the defense started imposing its will. And by the end of the third quarter, it was 31-10, and that was pretty much all she wrote. You can't say this was a dominating 60-minute performance, but after that first quarter, it was pretty much smooth sailing for the boys in black and gold, don't you think?
Yeah, I was a little bit worried there in the first quarter. The Argonauts looked pretty decent with James Franklin and their running back, their new guy, Brandon Burks, I believe his name is.
Yep.
He looked impressive early on. So even into halftime, when it was 18-10, I was like, you know, I'd like for them to put some points and put some more points up on the board and really separate themselves from the Argonauts. And that's what they did at the start of the third and going into the fourth. You know, those 13 points in the third were huge. And after that, it was pretty much all Hamilton's game.
So there were obviously some standout performances in this game that we will get to in a minute. But I want to start by talking about how this game was kind of one of those everyone contributes type of games. And I'd like to start about the offense, and we're going to get to the holy trinity of Brandon Banks, Jeremiah Mazzoli, and Luke Tasker a little bit later. But I want to talk about, like, Mike Jones, for instance, had a ridiculous, beautiful catch early in this one. It was on one of the first two drives. He's diving down. He catches it with his fingertips, caresses it up against his shoulder, keeps it off the ground. It's like, man, like, Mike Jones has really started to develop into a pretty consistent receiver. And we got a tweet from one of our listeners, Adam, who is for maybe one of our earliest supporters on the podcast. And he asked if maybe we were being a little bit too hard on Mike Jones. And when you see him make catches like that, it makes you wonder and kind of hope that he's turned the corner this season, right, Mike?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, the criticism of Mike Jones was, you know, was warranted because he was doing dumb things, or, well, not dumb things, but he was dropping the ball, this and that, you know, passes off his face mask when he's wide open. But I really think, and I want to cheer for Mike Jones. Like, we always thought that there was a ton of potential there with his speed and all that good stuff. But yeah, I think that he has gotten over the hump, and I think there's potential there for him to have a great career in the CFL. You know, not just as a good Canadian receiver, but overall in this league as a top-notch receiver, you know, in general. So he's showing a lot of good things, Josh, and I'm starting to get on the Mike Jones bandwagon.
Yeah, Adam asked us essentially if he's the second best Canadian receiver in the league behind Brad Sinopoli. And obviously I believe Sinopoli's third in the league in receiving yards, so it's clear he's above and beyond everyone else. And when you look around the league, there's guys like, I like Shaq Johnson out in BC. I think Breskison out in Calgary is pretty good. Nate Behar looks like he's finally turning into something with Edmonton. There are some good receivers, Canadian receivers around the league, but when you look at it and you look at the numbers and you look at the sort of the impact they've had, it's pretty easy to make an argument that Mike Jones is the second best Canadian pass catcher in the CFL right now.
It's interesting because Brad Sinopoli's up there. Obviously, he's a great receiver. But yeah, you mentioned those names and they're like, yeah, they might be good one day, but there's not really a ton of impact Canadian receivers right now in the league besides Brad Sinopoli. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's like all those years when Andy Fantuz dominated, there were other guys underneath him that, like, there was, for instance, an example off the top of my head, Dave Stala, Chris Getzlaff. Mm. Like, there were guys who could put up 1,000-yard seasons. But you're right. Like, after Sinopoli, there's kind of a pretty far drop-off. But is Mike Jones the guy right after him? I think he might be.
Yeah, you know, I can't really argue with that. There's not a lot of veteran Canadian receivers out there that are clearly ahead of Mike Jones right now. He had a rough, you know, first half of the season maybe, but now I think he's really turned it on, and we could see big things from him. So, you know, I wouldn't argue it that he's not the second best, because I don't see anyone else there that is really above him except for Sinopoli. So, yeah.
So staying with Canadians, 2018 fifth-round pick Justin Buehren saw his first action of the year, and it was his first start, and he was starting in place of Terrence Oliver, who was injured and is now on the six-game injured list due to concussions. Buehren finished the game with 3 catches for 31 yards, and while those aren't massive numbers, I feel like he didn't look out of place at all on the field there. And I feel like when you look at Buehren, it's starting to show just how well that this Ticats team has drafted over the last few years. This is the first team. They are the only team in the CFL this year to start 2 players from their draft class of this most recent year of 2018. You add in the contributions they've gotten from a Mike Jones, from guys like Mercer Timmis, Sean Thomas Erlington, Connor McGuff, and of course the two starting offensive linemen, Brandon Revenberg and Darius Sirocco. And it starts to feel like we should probably on draft day maybe not be so over the top in our criticisms of who the team takes, because it's clear in seeing Buehren play in this game and the list of guys I just mentioned, this team knows how to draft Canadian talent.
Yeah, they've done a really good job over the past, you know, 5 years or so, going back into the Austin regime. I thought that they did a great job back then too. So yeah, they had a lot of choices in this past year's draft, and they've done a hell of a job, and that's always massively important to get those draft picks right, because the Canadian talent in this league is sometimes not hard to come by, but you know, it's not as widely available obviously as the American guys.
We also saw the Ticats make a change at quarterback, and Dane Evans is now the team's short yardage QB. I don't know why this change was made. I didn't hear anything about it leading up to the game. I think it's interesting to make a change like this so late in the season. What did you think of the move, Mike? I thought he was pretty good in short yardage situations. Didn't fumble the ball, always picked up the first down when he did the plunge. I think a pretty successful debut for Dane Evans as a short yardage QB.
It was a little surprising to see him come in there because usually Mazzoli just stays in for those. But anything to get Mazzoli off the field, you never know what could happen on a short yardage if you get, piled on or whatever in that scrum or whatnot. If it takes him out and there's less chance of injury for Mazzoli, I'm all for it because, if anything happens to Mazzoli, we might be in big trouble. And let's just keep our fingers crossed that he's healthy all the way through.
So let's shift to the defensive side of the ball, Mike, and let's talk about Delvin Bro, because I feel like he took this game over for in the midway portion of that game. He had the gorgeous pass breakup while he was in man-to-man coverage on SJ Green. He had a beautiful backfield tackle on Brandon Burks, and maybe the signature play of this game, Brandon Banks' touchdown that we'll talk about a bit might up this, but his punch out force fumble on James Franklin that he recovered was just that's tenacity from a player. We talk about Delvin Bro quite a bit. We haven't talked about him in a while because he doesn't get a ton of stats, and his presence is felt basically by him just doing his job better than anyone else in the CFL. And I think it's not even a debate to say he's the best cover corner in this league, and whoever is second, I don't care who you list, they're nowhere near Delvin Bro. But he made some plays against the Argos that actually got him on the stat sheet, and I just think that this was just a great game from Delvin Bro.
Yeah, the force fumble and the recovery, I mean, that just shows immense football IQ from him. James Franklin, he might break that. He was past everyone, and Delvin just held onto his jersey and punches out the ball with ease, and he picks up the ball, he returns it for 15, 20 yards. I mean, I don't think we realized how big. I mean, we're all very excited about the Delvin Bro signing, but just how big a contribution he's given this Hamilton Tiger Cats team. It obviously, it doesn't, like you said, it doesn't show up on the stat sheet every week, but quarterbacks are afraid to throw his way, and it was highlighted on the on TSN, the Bermuda Triangle stuff, the numbers, with what's his face that does the numbers on TSN. My
Derek
his
Taylor.
name, there you go, Derek Taylor does the numbers, and he had a thing on the Bermuda Triangle, Delvin Bro, and just how little, teams throw his way. This guy is the best in the league by far, and I remember there was a lot of talk. Oh, he's coming back from the NFL. Oh, he's banged up. He's not going to be the same player, and all this stuff. And I always had confidence that this guy was going to slide right back in and just do his thing like he did back in 2015 or whatever the last year it was when he was with the Tiger Cats. And he hasn't missed a beat at all. He might even be better than he was before he left.
Do you know how mad I am that we didn't think of Bermuda Triangle?
I know.
That could have been a
It
best-selling shirt.
could have been, but we're
We're late. We're late to
stupid,
the
stupid
party.
men. Yeah. Couldn't figure it out. Couldn't put the pieces together, Josh.
No, it's very sad. When I saw that, I was like, "Oh, you've got to be kidding me! How did we
Yeah.
not?" Anyway, moving on. I want to talk about a guy right now, another secondary player that we don't we I don't know if we've talked about him at all this year. But I think he's put together a pretty solid campaign. That's Kariel Brooks. And he, like Bro, had a very nice pass breakup on SJ Green. His was in the end zone, so it makes it even more important. He also had an interception this game that was I'm in there, I'm in the stands at BMO, and he makes a pick, and I'm just like, did he actually catch that? Like, it was an incredible interception. Brooks is not a household name, maybe even amongst Ticat fans. And I think he does get overshadowed a bit because he plays next to Bro. He is the halfback on the boundary side where Bro plays corner. But I think he's had a pretty solid year this year. We don't hear his name mentioned a ton, and that's a good thing for a DB. But I think he's played well all year, and I think he had a pretty darn good game against the Argos.
Yeah, I thought he had another really good game, maybe a little bit under the radar, but yeah, he's had a great season. Another guy that kind of popped out to me, that hasn't been talked a lot about, but was talked about a lot last year, is Richard Leonard. I thought he had a pretty good game as well. He had six defensive tackles, I thought he was all over the field, no interceptions or anything like that. But I thought he contributed a lot in this game, and you know, I think he's fallen off a little bit from his great rookie season last year. But maybe we're starting to see him, you know, adapt better to this defense, you know, the man to man stuff. So it was nice to see him have a good game this last weekend.
Yeah, I think he set the standard so high last year. We have to remember he put up numbers as a rookie, so he had a bunch of interceptions because people didn't know who he was. And he did it on a really bad team. That defense at the start of the year, if we recall, was atrocious. I think his numbers have dipped this year, but I think he was also hurt to start the season, so I think he's getting healthy now. He had an open field tackle in this game to force a third down that I turned to my friends and said, that made my nips hard. Because open field, I kid you not, man, open field tackles are one of my favorite things in football when it's just one-on-one in open space. The offensive player's got the ball, and your defensive guy makes the tackle to stop him short of a first down. That is one of those – it's not a play you're going to see on the highlight reel, but it's one of those ones that when I see it, it just – a grin goes on my face because I just love those things so much.
Yeah, I mean, it's – important thing to be able to do, because if he misses that tackle, we might be in a little bit of trouble. So yeah, I was impressed with this game. Unamba had another good game. You know, he just continues his phenomenal season. You know, a guy that I forgot was even on the team. I'm looking at the stat sheet, and Josh Johnson. I forgot that guy was even on the team. You know, he didn't have a huge game or anything. Just one defensive tackle and one special teams tackle. But it's funny that, you know, one of our strengths on this team now is the defensive backfield, and a guy like Josh Johnson, I believe a former all-star in this league, doesn't really get on the field. So that just shows the depth we have in the secondary.
Josh Johnson played so well in the CFL. He spent 2 years down in the NFL. Like, the guy can play ball, and you're right. Yep. He can't get on the field here because the secondary is so good, but yet sticks around because I think, like a lot of fans, start to get that feeling that something special might be happening here in Hamilton. Before we move on to our likes and dislikes, though, Mike, I want to talk about special teams. We're not going to talk about the kicker, and I'm not even going to say his name, but we'll talk about him in a little bit later. But I thought the return game and the coverage units in this one both played pretty well. Frankie Williams, I think we saw fully healthy. I think he could be a difference maker, and maybe you'll disagree with me because sometimes you do that on things like this, but that illegal block penalty that negated his TD return, I don't think that necessarily sprung him. I think it was one of those instances where the guy threw a block when he didn't need to, because I think Williams was gone anyway. I think he would have scored without it. I think he had some other decent returns in this one. There was one I remember where he's in a cluster of Argos and he's dipping and diving and running guys over and making guys miss. Maybe he only picked up another 4, 5, 6 yards, but trying to be elusive, I like the spark that he brought to the return game. And the cover teams, I thought they did an excellent job of keeping the Argos at bay. These, again, they're not usually things that we point out a lot, but in a game where this is what I referred to earlier, it's kind of like a full team effort, I figured, why not give some love to the little unheralded bits of the team here, you know?
I mean, Frankie, I was impressed with Frankie as well. You know, we've been shuffling our returners all season long, and that's, you know, one area where we've actually had to flip-flop quite a bit, and I'm hoping that they'll settle in with you know, Frankie, or maybe they'll give Sinkfield a look back there too, but yeah, I was really impressed with Frankie Williams. I thought that he did a great job, and you're right, that block to the side, it wasn't a legal block, but I thought he would have been gone no matter what. That guy just has to not throw that hit. I mean, it's just constant in this league. People just players just find a way to block in the back. They find a way to throw that illegal block when it's not even necessary. So, yeah, if that guy doesn't do that bonehead move, Frankie Williams has a touchdown on the board.
All right, let's get into our likes and dislikes from this. And why don't you kick things off, Mike, and tell us all what you liked about this game?
Well, I'm a big Luke Kasker fan.
Oh,
so
that's an understatement.
Yeah. This guy, he's just an incredible football player. Not huge gaudy numbers, you know, 4 receptions, 63 yards, but the big difference, the big thing on the stat sheet for Luke Kasker is 3 touchdowns. He just knows what to do when they're in the red zone. Obviously, Mazzoli has an eye out for him when they're in the red zone. It's just incredible to watch. Luke Kasker, maybe not his biggest year. He probably had a bigger year last year, but this guy continues to just know where to be on the field and make those catches.
And the three touchdowns he had, he scored them in three different ways. There was the quick out at the goal line that he scored in his first one, then a busted coverage that leaves him wide open in the end zone. And it's like, if you're guarding receivers on this team, there's two guys on this team you don't leave open, and Luke Tasker is one of them because he's going to catch it every single time. And the third one was, my God, what a throw by Mazzoli, and then Tasker takes it to the house. Like, that's the thing, too. It's one thing for him to score three times, which is incredible. And he said after the game he probably hasn't had a three-touchdown game since he was in high school. But it's the ways in which he scored, three completely different routes, three completely different throws from the quarterback. This guy can do it all, man. This guy can do it all.
Yeah, that the first touchdown, I just the awareness of where he was on the field. You know, he knew he's right at the goal line. He didn't try to do anything fancy. All he did was kind of, you know, lunge into the end zone, kind of fall into the end zone, and that's just how smart of a football player Luke Tasker is. I know it might seem like I'm exaggerating, you know, it just fell into the end zone. But a lot of players might try to, you know, juke and jive and maybe get tackled at the one. He just gets in there, gets the points, and moves on. So, yeah, Luke Tasker, he just continues to impress me, even though it's pretty hard after, you know, he's been around for a while, and he just keeps – he's my favorite player on the team. He just is.
I can't argue it. Come on. He's just so much fun to watch. He's one of those guys who – he seems like an everyman who can do Superman things. And that's why everyone loves Luke Tasker.
My other like in this game was the defensive line. A weakness at one point for the Tiger Cats. We talked about it many times. They didn't seem to get pressure early on in the season. I thought they did a great job of getting to Franklin, you know, disrupting him. I believe they had three sacks on the evening. And Hauser, again, comes up with another sack. He's been getting sacks in, you know, the last couple games, which is impressive. Same with Capicotti. Capicotti, another sack. So I just like how this defensive line is rounding out as we head into the playoffs. They're either getting better and better as we go along. Nikita Whitlock, a sack as well. He's a great player, you know, on both sides of the ball, wherever you want to put him. I'm just really pumped about how this defensive line is looking right now.
I'm right there with you, pal. I thought they got a ton of pressure in this one. Teddy LaRon, I remember, had a big play in this where it wasn't for a sack, but he's grabbing onto Franklin and forced a throwaway, essentially. You mentioned the three sacks. There was the third down stuff on a QB sneak that they got. This defensive line has really morphed into, over the last couple of weeks, a darn good unit. And the thing I think that's most impressive, and I know you want to talk about this, is the depth. Like, there's no Adrian Tracy on that line right now, and he was a starter. There's no Jason Neal on this line right now, and he was a starter. And they keep getting the job done. This is the key to me, man. Like, we know how good the secondary is, and as weird as it is to say that, they are. We know these linebackers are amongst the best in the league, if not the best in the league. And we said it last week, if this defensive line can continue this, and now it's 2 weeks in a row, and against two different teams, they can do it again against Ottawa, who have had trouble against the pass. Like, when passing the ball, that offensive line has not been playing very well. And we're not going to talk about the Ottawa game right now, but I don't know, man. Like, if this continues, this defense, I'm salivating at what they could do come playoff time.
Yeah, the depth is tremendous. You know, there's been a lot of injuries, and these guys that are getting sacks weren't necessarily supposed to be starters. They're supposed to be, you know, rotation guys, backup guys, maybe not Capicotti per se, but I think he was going to be somewhat of a rotation guy as well. And yeah, I mean, imagine if we had all the starters back. I know that we won't get them all back, obviously, but if these guys stepping in, if they can do the job, then more power to them, and we can just keep rolling along.
All right, pal, I'm going to now talk about the things I liked about this game, and I'm starting with the quarterback. I thought Jeremiah Mazzoli was brilliant in this game. The numbers, they speak for themselves, Mike. 21 of 30, 338 yards, four touchdown passes, and yes, I know he had two interceptions, but if you look at those picks, one came on a tip ball, while the other came when Mazzoli was taking a shot deep when they were up 34-13 and trying to ice the game. It was an underthrown ball. But interceptions like this, they don't really bother me. These aren't the bad throws or the wrong reads. They're not the interceptions he was throwing earlier in the season where he's throwing across his body into traffic in the middle of the field and he's throwing it high and over a receiver. Like, no picks are good picks, Mike, but I can live with interceptions like the two he threw in this one, especially because he also threw four touchdown passes. Like,
yep.
I want zero interceptions, and these are the first two interceptions he's thrown in 3 weeks. Since Labor Day, he has thrown 16 touchdown passes and five interceptions. The idea that he's going to make the ill-timed killer interception, that is dead as of right now. That's not part of his game. It was earlier in the year. It's not now. I think even with those two picks, I thought he was marvelous in this one.
Well, this is how psychotic I am. I was watching the game by myself, and he threw a pick, and like there was the Twitter people that hate Mazzoli on my shoulder, like, oh, you threw a pick there, bud. And I actually said, shut up, out loud. Like, that's how psychotic I am. But it was bothering me. But, yeah, I mean, listen, he's not going to be perfect. There's going to be some interceptions. You mentioned the interceptions in this game, the one late. The game was already in the bag. After that, he was pulled for Dane Evans. So, I mean, you look at his numbers, 21 to 30, 70%. 338 yards, 11 games over 300 yards this season, which is just phenomenal. He's edging his way to 5,000 yards passing. His touchdown to interception ratio has balanced out nicely now. He's a serious MOP candidate. He's at the top of the league right now, quarterback wise. I don't think there's anyone better slinging the ball right now than Jeremiah Mazzoli.
I 100% agree with you, and I know we're going to get called homers by fans, especially in Edmonton and Calgary, but if you look at the way now, Mike Riley was brilliant in that game against the Red Blacks last
week.
Yeah,
thank you very much for that, Eskimos.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you very much, Edmonton. You did us a favor. As I said, drinky poos are on Mike. Great cup for that win. Thank you very much. I know I didn't okay that with you, but you'll be fine. You'll be fine.
Yep. I'm rich.
But aside from that game, Riley hasn't played particularly well the last few weeks. But Levi Mitchell hasn't played particularly well the last couple of games. Jeremiah Mazzoli, and this I think is emblematic of the team. They're peaking at the right. This is one of those things where you look back on the season and go, the Hamilton Tigercats won the Grey Cup. How did that happen? You go, well, you know what? Look at how they did the run. And this is what you see from championship teams. They put 6, 7, 8 of their final 10 wins in, like, you know what I mean? Like, they win down the stretch and they start putting things together and they go on a roll. And with this team, it starts with the quarterback. He is making the right choice. He threw the ball away in this one. He's scrambling around and he throws it away. That's not a play he makes in July. That is a play he's making in October. It feels like, for as good as he's been all season, he's getting even better now. And that is freaking scary for the rest of this league.
Especially you think about all the weapons he's lost at the receiver position. You know, it seems like as long as he has Banks and Tasker in there, he'll be okay. And now we had the new guy coming in who should be a big difference as well. And you got Mike Jones out there who's improving. Some young receivers that looked pretty good last game, Justin Buren. Still, even with all those injuries, there's still a lot of weapons on the field for Jeremiah Mazzoli. You know, in the running game, you got John White, or you have Alex Green, or you have Mercer Timmis, or you have Thomas Erlington. Thomas Erlington looked good last game as well. So, yeah, I mean, Jeremiah Mazzoli, he's a serious candidate for MOP, and I don't say that lightly because, you know, Mike Riley has been great for most of the season, but you look at the numbers now, and it's starting to sway in Mazzoli's way. Levi Mitchell will be in the conversation as well, but you know, and it doesn't matter really if he wins MOP. I'm just saying that's the level that he's playing at this year.
Okay, so I'm not really sure we could really say anything new about Brandon Banks, but we're going to talk about Brandon Banks because he was a beast in this game once again. The numbers, Mike: 8 catches, 178 yards, and a touchdown. The TD catch. Famously, gift, saw him run straight into the goalpost, which, I'll be completely honest with you, it made me laugh pretty hard when I was at the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. I don't think I can't remember the last time I saw a player really run into the goalpost, you know, and hold on to it, get a touchdown. But Yeah, man. I mean, that was the safety, the standing still safety. He was dressed in blue, and he took a hit, and he held on. But Brandon Banks, he doesn't drop any passes anymore. Have you like he just doesn't drop the ball. That was one of his things earlier on, that he had a little bit of the dropsies, but he's just such a solid, dependable receiver right now with the speed, with the he's very aggressive. He doesn't seem like he notices how his size. He's a very small guy, and obviously he's susceptible to big hits, but it just seems like he has no fear. So this, Brandon Banks, Mazzoli might be the best quarterback in the league right now. Brandon Banks might be the best receiver. I'd have to think he's top three.
I think he's top two, Mike, and I don't think he's number two.
Yeah. I
He's missed
mean,
two
the
games this
numbers.
year, so he's second in pretty much every category. I think he's tied for first in touchdown catches. He's second in yards, and he's second in catches, and he's missed two games. But he's been unstoppable, man. And like, this is the thing, is that teams know that Jeremiah Mazzoli is going to look at him more than anyone else, and it just doesn't matter, like, at all. Like, he's always leading the team in receptions. He's leading the team in targets. Like, he is the go-to guy, and teams still can't stop him. And what he did on Friday, to me, it's almost no longer headline worthy because it's not a surprise. Like, and it you look at it, you go, okay, he went for nearly 200 yards and a touchdown. That's what he does. Like, that's his game. His game is, oh, he had seven catches for 140 yards and a touchdown. That's what Brandon Banks does. I'll be more surprised when he has a bad game now than I am when he has a great. Like, if we ever come on the show and it's like, man, Brandon Banks only had 60 yards and three catches, that will be a shock. Him going for eight for a buck 78 and a touchdown, that's not a shock to me at all.
Not really surprising anymore. It's just like
It's who he is.
it's who he is, and he just knows this offense so well. Like, obviously he has the speed, he can get away from defenders, he has that speed to do that, but he's just reading the defense and going where he's supposed to be, and that's a testament to Mazzoli and Banks's chemistry that they have. But I think one thing that Brandon Banks doesn't get enough credit for is his football IQ, because he wouldn't be racking up these numbers if he didn't know what the hell he was doing in this offense. This offense, it was meant for Brandon Banks to play in. Just full credit to June Jones for, recognizing, hey, we can get this guy on the field on offense and he can do big things. That's one of the first things he recognized when he came on. Came into this team. So one thing that Austin was very reluctant to do. So I just want to give the thumbs up to June Jones for recognizing that this guy is a serious talent as a receiver, not just as a returner.
How crazy is it? And I think I've mentioned this before, but I think it's worth mentioning again. How crazy is it that, what was it, probably a year and a half ago, we were openly talking about and we're getting questions about, is this Brandon Banks' last year in Hamilton? And then recently it's come out that they nearly traded him or they were going to cut him. Like, to see where he is now to where he was a year and a half ago, it's stunning. It's absolutely stunning.
Yeah, and if they did, if he would have got cut, like maybe another team doesn't take him in and put him as a receiver full time. Maybe we never see this potential from Brandon Banks. Maybe we never see it fulfilled, like how good he actually is as a receiver. So, once again, for June Jones to have that eye and to see the talent, the possibilities that Brandon Banks had, it shows how smart of a guy he is too.
He was an all-star return man, and now in the second act of his career, he's turning into an all-star receiver. And if he can keep this up for another 3, 4, 5 years, he's got a Hall of Fame case. Like, if he continues to put up 1,200 yard, 10 touchdown seasons when he's 34, like, then you start talking about him as one of the all-time greats. And I just hope it's all here. He's a free agent at the end of the season. I think he knows that this is where he's best suited. He's got a coach that believes in him. He's got a quarterback that loves to throw to him. It's going to be a real treat to watch Brandon Banks in this part of his career just keep getting better and better, because that's the crazy thing too. He keeps getting better, and the sky's the limit. It's crazy to say about a 30-year-old player, but the sky's the limit for him at receiver right now.
Yeah, there's still, years left in his career. I mean, he doesn't have to be the fastest guy on the field to be productive. just the way that he's playing right now, he can find those zones, he can find the soft spots in the defense and still turn it upfield, even if he's lost a step in the upcoming years. So I hope he's a Ticat for a long time. You know, he deserves to get a sizable raise, I'd say. I know he's getting paid really well right now, but if you're, you know, top tier receiver in the league, you gotta be compensated, you know? So hopefully they do that.
So I think it's time to give a little peek behind the curtain here, because this is something rare. This is something that doesn't happen often. But for everyone listening out there, Mike and I, we will discuss what we plan to do for this part of the show, the game review. We kind of go, okay, what did you like? What did you dislike? And more often than not, I'd say, our likes and dislikes kind of align with each other. We usually end up agreeing, yeah, these are the things we liked, these are the things we didn't. This week's a little bit different. Mike wanted to put the offensive line in his likes. Well, I had them in my dislikes. So I figured that instead of us choosing one side to put them in and then kind of debating it that way, we kind of settled on sticking this sort of in the middle section here and discussing it like adults. So expect a ton of name calling and hurt feelings and maybe a little crying on my part to occur over the next few minutes. So Mike, why don't you tell everyone why you think the offensive line deserved a like for this game?
Well, I think that they had a little bit of a rough first half. I thought Mazzoli was under pressure here and there. But as the game went on, I thought they got better and better. Now, they gave up two sacks to a team that doesn't really get sacks. But the one sack came from the linebackers crew. Jeff Knox Jr. got a sack, so I got to assume that he was coming on a blitz of some sort. So, you know, it wasn't a straight up, you know, 4-on-5 defensive line versus offensive line type deal. There was some kind of blitz thrown in there, or something happened. And the other sack did come from a defensive lineman, Troy Davis, familiar name to Ticat fans. But I do agree that they had a bit of a rough first and second quarter. It wasn't the best. But as we got into the third and fourth, I thought that Mazzoli had more time back there. And, you know, there two sacks really isn't a ton. So, I mean, I've still given them a thumbs up, but it's not like over the top, like they were amazing thumbs up.
You dirty SOB. Using my again, peek behind the curtain. We discussed these things before we record. You used one of my points against me, you son of a bitch.
That's right.
So I'm going to tell you why I'm you say your thumbs up, point your thumbs slightly up. I'm thumbs slightly down. And this is, again, they weren't atrocious. This wasn't one of those like, oh my god, it's like the Ottawa game, the one they played back in July where the offensive line couldn't stop me if they wanted to. I just thought that after the way they played in shutting down BC's great pass rush, the Sean Lemon and Odell Willis went two games without really doing much of anything. I don't think that the line played up to that standard in this game. You mentioned the sack, so I don't have to belabor that point. But the run game, too, in this one, it had been clicking fairly well. Obviously, John White had a huge game a couple weeks ago against BC and Hamilton. And it just seemed like every time he touched the ball in this, he was getting hit at the line of scrimmage, behind the line of scrimmage, or very soon after. He had 13 carries in this for just 52 yards. And I know that lack of success isn't entirely offensive on the offensive line, but I feel like they do have to take some of the blame, because the running game was working just a week ago. And then I'm kind of with you. Like, I didn't like what I saw early, and then I liked better what I saw later. Whereas you're kind of in the same boat, but like that run game worked so well against BC, to see it kind of sputter in this one was a little surprising. I also thought pass protection was a little hit or miss. I think on some plays you had Jeremiah Mazzoli with like a ton of time back there. And then on others, he was like scrambling and running for his life. So like I said, this isn't like a straight, like they sucked. It's more of like, well, they played so well the last few weeks that's sort of the standard that I expected. So I'm a little disappointed in how they played in this one. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair. And I, you know, maybe they weren't as up for the, I know you have to be up for every game. This was a very important game. Maybe they're going to really turn it up these next two games against Ottawa, because, you know, obviously those two games are the two most important games in the season. So if we can get some, like, you know, I'd give it maybe a B minus this game. If we can get up to a A for next game, I would be very happy with that.
All right. Now we're going to go to the things we disliked. And Mike, we got to talk about that bloody kicker again. And his, yeah, that rumbling you hear is not Mike farting. That is his. This guy, and again, like I said earlier, I don't even want to use his name, but he is so endlessly frustrating with how inconsistent he is. I almost don't want to talk about it because I'm sick of it, but we have to, right?
Another kick out of bounds, Josh. Another kickoff.
That is
Are we not practicing this, people? Are we
Labor
not
Day.
practicing?
The game
Jesus
after
Christ.
Labor, since Labor Day, I think he's booted one out of bounds. And I'm going to go back and check one day and look at all the kicks and punts that he's had to find out how many he's had this season. But I'm fairly certain it's at least 7 straight games that he has kicked a ball, whether it's a kickoff or a punt, out of bounds for a penalty.
It's truly remarkable, isn't it?
It's almost like you'd have
That
to.
must be a new record.
It's got to be. Like, I know it's not a record anyone's going to keep, but it's got to be. Like, when he kicks the
It's
ball out of bounds, I'm watching it, like, it knuckled off his foot, and I'm just like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. And literally, I'm sitting with my group of friends at the game, and they're just like, well, there it is. And it's like everyone knows it's coming. And then he missed a point after. And my one friend who I'm sitting with at the game, she jokingly says, well, he got the single, he got the rouge on the punt earlier, so it makes up for it. And it's like, that's where we've come with this guy. And the thing that baffles me the most, and I think this has got to be like the 20th week in a row we've talked about this, or at least that's how it feels. He goes there and kicks like a 45-yard field goal. He kicks 50-yard field goals like it's no one's business. Like, that's what bothers me, is that he's clearly good at his job, but there's some parts of his job where he just doesn't. I just don't know, man. Like, I just don't know. That's how
Yeah, and you look,
I just don't
you.
know.
I know you don't know, Josh. I know you don't know.
Did I
But
say I don't
like, you
know?
look at the numbers, like straight up, field goals 2 for 2. Ah, punts. I think he had an average of 50.8. That's pretty good, right? But and we wouldn't be talking about this if he didn't do it every week. It seems like he misses an extra point every single week, and he kicks off out of bounds every single week. So, otherwise, other than that, he's been pretty good. And you look at the numbers in this game, pretty good. But you just can't keep doing that. I mean, the kickoffs out of bounds is like the most preventable thing. Okay, the field is so big. I've said
65
it 5,000
yards.
times over and over and over and over. But how? Just practice this. Practice your kickoffs. That's all you should be doing. I don't know. Just get better, okay?
Yeah,
An
let's.
unknown, unnamed kicker.
Yeah.
We'll start calling you by your actual name when you go a game without kicking off out of bounds. How
I
about
think
that?
that if he can go a game without getting an illegal kick penalty on either a kickoff or a punt, you get your name back. I think that's only
There you go.
fair.
That's fair. That's
All
fair.
right. Let's move on because there's only one other thing from this game that I think we can both agree on that we disliked. And man, Al Bradbury and his refereeing crew, they just suck. Like, I don't know how else to put it, man. I know this isn't an earth-shattering revelation, but I thought the referees were really bad in this one, and not just against the Ticats. There were a couple calls in the Argos in this one. Roughing the passer on Matt Webster and a roughing call on Ronnie Yell for a tackle on Brandon Banks. I thought they were both absolutely ridiculous. There was a pass interference call on Jamal Roll when Roll wasn't even in on the play. The penalty likely was meant to be credited to Don Unamba, but even so, that wasn't pass interference on Unamba either. He was making a play on the ball, and you're allowed to make, like, as a defender, you're allowed position and you're allowed to try to go for the ball. He was going for the ball to make an interception, nearly made the pick. And then at one point in the game, and I don't know if this was, actually, I know because I went and watched the game again, this wasn't relayed to the home viewer. There was a penalty called on a Hamilton punt that the Argos fielded and got a pretty good return on. And the flag was called, I think it was holding on Hamilton. It was actually on Toronto and moved them back inside their own 20. Like, that's an embarrassment to me, as far as I'm concerned. And I know that there are fans around the league and they all hate Al Bradbury and his crew of doofuses. And it's not for the reason that most people usually hate refs because they think they're biased against their team. It's because they suck. And man, it's hard. Like, it's, I don't like ripping on the refs too much, but this refereeing crew in this game sucked huge on Friday night.
What do you think about the pass interference call on Hamilton where,
The Banks one where they challenge. Yeah, I see.
where Trestman challenged it? I wasn't, it was borderline at
It
best.
was it was one of those ones where if they didn't throw the flag and it was challenged for pass interference, I feel like the call on the field stands. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think, like, actually, it's funny because we were actually, because there was a very long review and it was right like that, Kurt, where we were sitting at BMO. It was like we were 16 rows up from the field at about like the 25-yard line. It happened essentially right in front of us. And we're kind of like, I guess it's pass interference, and yay, because it's going to help us. I don't know if I want that to be the standard for pass interference. It didn't look like it was a catchable ball. It looked like both Banks, and I think that was Ronnie Yell on that one too, were kind of fighting each other for it. Like, I don't know, man. I didn't love the call. I'm happy it went our way. I think they scored a touchdown on like two plays later, so it helped us, I guess. But I don't like that being the standard for pass interference going forward. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was funny on the – I guess you watched the game later on TV, but Trestman went up to him and was like, you're lucky I'm mic'd up. I've never said anything to you in 7 years, but you're lucky I'm mic'd up. So obviously Trestman was pretty pissed about it too. And, yeah, I mean, yeah, they were not great, that's for sure. And a lot of them were penalties against Toronto that I thought were unnecessary. So it's not just a bias thing. They just – didn't have a good game.
No, they sucked both ways. All right, Mike, let's talk about what I think is the best part of each show, and that's naming the Podski Player of the Week. So take it away, Mike. Who is our PPOT dub for this week, pal?
PPOT dub is Mr. Luke Tasker.
Faux show.
I know that, you know, receiving yardage-wise, he doesn't stand out to Brandon Banks' game, but the three touchdowns, we discussed it, and it just put him over the edge. The guy is money in the red zone, four catches, 63 yards, 15.8-yard average, along a 48, and those four mentioned three touchdowns were huge for the Tiger Cats in this game. He's just Mr. Clutch, and he is our Podski Player of the Week. I believe this is Luke Tasker's first award for Podski Player of the Week.
Did we name him after the Edmonton game when he had the big touchdown?
I don't recall if he was or not.
We might have, because he had a huge game. We might have,
well, first or second.
Yes.
So.
Well deserved. What about the, again, I know people don't like Rod Black, but he called Luke Tasker the Argo Killer, and I'm kind of down with that being his nickname.
Yeah. He always seems to play well against the Argonauts, and, you know, you look at the opposite side, and, you know, the Ticat Killer, S.J. Green, had a pretty big game as well, seven catches, 127 yards. So, yeah, there was a Ticat Killer on the field, and there was a Argo Killer on the field.
All right, Mike, time to talk some Ticats news, and this is a big one. Last week, in our haste to try to find some receiver help for this team, we were thinking about, well, maybe they can go add an S.J. Green at the trade deadline. There was one thing we didn't think about the team possibly going and doing, and that was hitting the free agent route. No, not Bakari Grant, though he did sign, I'm sure you saw, with the Calgary Stampeders earlier on Monday, yep. So good for him to be back in the league. No, Mike, I'm talking about the return of one Terrell Sinkfield, and I'm pretty sure if you're listening to us, I don't have to run down Sinkfield's resume for you, but I will anyway. He was a Ticat for part of the 2014 and all of the 2015 season. In 2015, he had 69 catches for 1,030 yards and six touchdowns. He then went and tried the NFL after that season, but came back to the CFL later in 2016 and signed with BC. Then he left again and kind of bounced around the NFL, trying to make it as a defensive back. And I believe he was released by the Oakland Raiders back in September. Nearly signed with the Cats, rumor has it, or at least that's what's being reported, a few weeks ago, but then tried to make one last go over the NFL when that didn't work out. Inked a deal to come back to Hamilton. He signed for the remainder of this season only, and then I'm assuming he's going to go and try to make it in the NFL one more time, maybe one last time. But man, with all the receiver injuries this team has dealt with over the last few weeks, Chris Williams, Galen Saunders, and now Terrence Tolliver, getting Sinkfield here for the stretch run, pretty big get for the Ticats, no?
You'd have to think so. I mean, this guy was killer when he was with the Ticats earlier in his career. You know, he came back to BC and wasn't overly impressive last year, I believe it was. Was it last year or was it
the
year before?
No, 2 years ago. It was 2016.
Two years ago.
How crazy is that?
I know. Time flies. But yeah, he didn't really show a ton when he came back to the BC Lions, but I think he'll add a lot to this offense. You know, the run and shoot. I think he'll fit in great in that system. You know, he has the speed. He's got some height to him. He has the experience. You know, he knows Jeremiah Mazzoli. Maybe didn't play a ton with him when he was here, but I'm sure they'll find a connection pretty quickly. And I hope that he can, you know, dive right into this, learn the playbook quickly, and hopefully we get him in that first Ottawa game this week I would understand if he doesn't play until the second game, but I'm hoping that he gets enough grasp on this offense that he can come in and contribute, because that first Ottawa game is huge. We got to win. We basically have to win both if we want first in the East, and to have him in that first game would be huge.
I think at least get him out there to be play on specials, because as good as Frankie Williams was, and we fluffed him earlier in the show, put Sinkfield back there too. Those two guys on kickoffs, who are you kicking to? Because both those guys can kill you with speed. I think Sinkfield's going to add a lot to this team over the stretch run. I don't know how much he will play offensively against Ottawa on this one, but I'll use a Mike Sherman line here. When they traded for Johnny Manziel, we didn't bring him in to sit him on the bench. They didn't bring Terrell Sinkfield in to sit on the bench. He's obviously still in football shape, clearly, because he was in an NFL training camp a month ago. So it's not like he's been out of shape and sitting on the couch for all this time. So, I mean, yes, the run and shoot is a different offense. It's a lot about read and react. You kind of have to get into it to know it. But I think Sinkfield's a smart player. He's got the speed that June Jones obviously is enamored with. A little bit more size, like you said, he's 6 foot, 200 pounds, so he's a little bit bigger than, obviously he's a lot bigger than Brandon Banks, but he's bigger than some of the receivers they have in this offense. Just deploy the dude. Even if you put him out there, teams are going to respect what he can do on the field, and that could open things up. And again, without him, this offense has clicked. I think they've scored something like 34 points per game in their last seven outings, I think it is, or something. It's over 30 points a game since, Labor Day, I think it was what it was. And that's with basically Banks and Tasker doing all the heavy lifting. Even if you throw Sinkfield out there, that's going to cause mismatches. Someone's going to be open, and we've seen Mike Jones step up and have big games. And we've seen, obviously, what Brandon Banks and Luke Tasker can do. Wow, sky's the limit. You add a weapon like this at this late stage, man, this is exciting. This is really exciting.
And I think it could even, potentially make – Mike Jones more dangerous because they're not going to be keying on Mike Jones as much when you got, Sinkfield, Tasker and Banks to keep an eye on. So, you might see Mike Jones pile up some big games here when going deep, when teams forget about him, because he's, he's not going to be covered more than those three big guys, the three-headed monster, if you will. So it's going to open up things for the offense. It's going to be a great addition to this team.
All right, let's talk some CFL news here now, Mike. And the trade deadline that we talked about last week came and went, and our Ticats didn't make any other moves or didn't trade for anyone. But other teams did, and it was kind of a busy trade deadline for, the CFL. So the Montreal Alouettes were involved in the two trades that were consummated last week. They made one deal with Ottawa, another with Saskatchewan. The Alouettes traded national defensive back / linebacker Chris Ackey to the Red Blacks for a second-round pick in the 2019 draft. And then they went and traded national offensive lineman Philip Blake and national fullback / tight end Patrick Lavoie to the Saskatchewan Roughriders for national receiver Josh Stanford and a second-round pick in the 2020 draft. So lots of questions to kind of parse through here, Mike. But the first one is, which of these three teams do you think made out the best at the trade deadline?
I think Ottawa did pretty good. I just don't understand this logic from Montreal. I mean, you got Philip Blake, a bona fide starter. Chris Ackey, a bona fide starter. Even Lavoie, he doesn't make, huge plays on the field, but he's a bona fide starter as well. But two top end starters they just get rid of who were not that old. I understand they lost a lot of draft picks through that trade with the Tiger Cats and everything, but you're trading away top end Canadian talent, and I just don't get it. I think the Chris Ackey trade really helps Ottawa, and I think that kind of sucks for Hamilton because Montreal just helped Ottawa get a little bit better.
Okay, so I'm going to defend the Alouettes here.
Okay,
or at least I'm going to try.
Right,
Patrick Lavoie, good player, fullback, tight end. You can find those guys. I don't think that's a big loss. Philip Blake is probably the worst of the guys they traded, but the Owls do have a lot of Canadian offensive line depth. They've spent two first-round picks next year's, which they don't have because they took Tyler Johnstone in the supplemental draft, and then they took Trey Rutherford in the actual draft last year. Plus, if you look at their roster, there's a lot of Canadian offensive linemen. Yes, Philip Blake is an all-star caliber player. He played really well for them. Yes, he's 32, so he still has a lot of time left on him. I don't feel like that's a huge loss because I think the Owls get a little cheaper because Philip Blake's making elite Canadian lineman money. Get a little cheaper, can play some of your kids, especially in a season where they're not making the playoffs. Let's see what these kids can do. Chris Ackie, from a pure talent perspective, that's a dumb move. But he's a free agent at the end of this year. And he apparently has expressed interest in trying for the NFL. And the Owlets tried to sign him to a contract extension. He turned them down and said, I'm going to go try the NFL. So it's not like the Red Blacks are going to get him for another 2 or 3 years. Maybe they will if he fails in the NFL and comes back. But this is essentially they traded a second round pick for a rental player. And like, look at what the Owls got back. They got a young national receiver, Canadian receiver in Stanford. Got a pair of second round picks in years they don't have first round picks. I'm not going to say that, oh, Kavis Reed blew the doors off these guys and look at what he stole. I think everyone, this and it's weird to say, everyone kind of got what they wanted and needed out of these deals. Yes, I agree with you. Chris Ackie going to the Red Blacks sucks as a Ticat fan because that just makes Ottawa that much better. But I think if you look at every like all the reasons why these moves were made, I don't think they're that bad. I think this is one of those ones where Kavis Reed didn't essentially Kavis Reed this.
I think he Kavis Reed it a bit. I just think that it's. I know that Chris Hackey's it's his last year and all that stuff, and they're not in the playoffs. But I just think you got to do everything you can to hold on to Canadian talent, in the prime of their careers. So I'm not going to totally crap on Kavis Reed for these moves, but I still think that a team like Montreal, who is really bad, can't afford to be trading away good Canadian talent.
I can't really disagree with you on that.
And you never know with the draft picks.
Oh,
It could
absolutely not.
take years, so I don't know. We'll see.
Absolutely
We'll
not.
see.
Yeah, we will see. Let's move on to the last bit of CFL news. And this comes from our friend Arash Madani. I'm hoping you can sense the sarcasm in my voice, who tweeted out that one or both of Jim Popp and Mark Trussman will be gone from the Argos after this season. He said that both could be gone, but that the expectation is that at least one of them will be. He says there's friction between the Argos brass and MLSE. And this to me, Mike, is we're a year removed from the Argos winning a Grey Cup with these two at the helm. And we're less than 2 years removed from the giant press conference and all the fanfare and all the fawning that came over the Argos when these two arrived after they late in the late process fired Milanovic and Jim Barker. The fact that one of these two guys could be gone a year, or both could be gone a year after winning a Grey Cup, and yes, they had a bad year this year, but that happens. This seems dumb to me. What say you?
I don't see what the friction could be. I mean, does MLC really even care about the Argonauts? Do they care if they lose or win? I don't know if they
They
do,
must care
but
about something. They
yeah,
would they be
I
meddling
suppose.
if they didn't?
True enough. I think it's unfortunate because obviously they're a good tandem. Maybe Trestman, if he's going to be in the CFL, he just wants to win Grey Cups, and if he's not going to be winning Grey Cups, then he wants the hell out. Maybe that's what's happening right now. But it's unfortunate for the Argonauts because it seemed like they were stable, had solid GM, solid head coach. Maybe last year was a bit of a fluke. I mean, they were 9-9. They got hot in the playoffs. I don't even think if Ricky Ray was healthy this season, I'm not sure that it would have made a difference to this team. They were just not good. Overall, their defense took a big crap. It seemed like Corey Chamberlain was a big loss for them. Their defense was near the bottom of the league all season long. Their offense couldn't produce anything. James Wilder Jr. couldn't, set the record that he wanted to set. I think they bumbled the quarterback position after Ricky Ray got injured a bit with taking out James Franklin and all that stuff. So yeah, I think there's a lot of blame to be put on the coach, to be honest, I think, for this season. And I'm not sure if there's going to be a firing or if they're just going to be stepping down. But if both of them are gone next season, it could be a couple rough seasons in Argoland.
So, if you had to put money on what you think would happen, is it Trestman gone? Is it Pop gone? Or is it both of them gone? For me, I think I'd put the likelihood that it's Trestman that leaves. If only one of them goes, it's Trestman. And I
Yeah,
think that
that's
it's
what I was
more
thinking
likely
as
that one
well.
of them leaves as opposed to both of them. I think Pop
Yeah.
stays, and I think he goes and finds another coach. Maybe he goes and grabs Scott Milanovic back from Jacksonville. Maybe or he finds someone else.
Maybe he hires himself. Maybe that.
Maybe he hires himself. Oh boy, I forgot about that even being a possibility.
Wouldn't it? That would be just terrible for the Argonauts.
Yes, but it'd be great for
us. Yeah, exactly. I agree. I agree with you that if one's gone, I think it'd be Trestman. Maybe he gets, you know, an assistant job in the NFL or something. Maybe he goes to the AAF or whatever. But yeah, if I had to pick one, I put my money on Trestman leaving.
Yeah, it's going to be a pretty wild offseason if this job goes vacant and we get to do the whole coaching carousel thing and see who lands where, because we know there's going to be a vacancy in BC. Maybe there's a vacancy elsewhere, depending on which one of those West teams doesn't make the playoffs if it's not BC. And then we could see a vacancy in Toronto, maybe one in Montreal. Could be a few coaching jobs. I think Hamilton's safe. What?
Yeah. That is going to be a wild offseason because you mentioned the coaching switcheroos, perhaps, and then all the quarterbacks that are free agents. Mm-hmm. The CBA is coming up. It's going to be a wild offseason. Hopefully we get that CBA lockdown. But free agent-wise, there's going to be a lot of movement.
It's going to be an interesting offseason indeed. But we still have a season to play out. We're not done yet. So let's talk about this upcoming game, Mike. We made it. This is probably the most important game that the Ticats have had, and it is as important as we thought it would be a few weeks ago. This Friday, our Ticats head to the nation's capital for a first-place showdown with the Ottawa Slapdicks, I mean Red Blacks. Both teams enter this game with identical 8-7 records, but they enter this game from different paths. The Ticats have won two in a row and five of their last seven, while the Red Blacks have lost their last two and have lost four of their last six. Ottawa currently holds the season series lead over Hamilton at 1-0, thanks to that 21-15 win in Hamilton back in July. But Mike, like I said, this is the biggest game for the Ticats so far this year. So tell us why they will get the W and move into sole possession of first place.
Well, I think they're going to get the W because, you know, Trevor Harris is very inconsistent, I find. The offense overall for the Red Blacks has been very inconsistent all year. You never know which team is going to show up, essentially.
Oh, I really thought you were going to do a Forrest Gump impression there.
Oh, sorry about that, bud.
Red Blacks offense is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
Well, you did it for me, so
right.
We're good.
25-year-old references that no one listening to the show understands, but us, let's move on.
Well, everyone knows Forrest Gump. Come on. D-line, I think the defensive line continues to build on their momentum. They're going to get some pressure on Harris. They're going to get some sacks. Jeremiah Mazzoli is going to continue his MOP-type season. He's going to put big numbers. Now I know we've had trouble against top-end defenses this year in the league. I thought we did a really good job against BC, who is near the top in many categories. So maybe we're turning the corner on playing against really talented defenses with really talented and high IQ coaches. So, you know, Ottawa's a good defense, but I think that Mazzoli's gonna put up some big numbers. Alex Green is coming back into the fold, which is surprising to me. He was on the sixth game. He's coming back a little early. I like John White, as do you. I don't know exactly what they're going to do, if Green's going to be starting or what, but either way, I think they go back to the running game more in this game, and they pound out some numbers on the ground. And just simply Banks and Tasker will continue their dominance. These guys are the big two for the Ticats right now in the receiving core, and they're going to put up touchdowns, and they're going to put up yards against this Red Blacks defense.
How is it, Mike, that we sit here, this will be the 16th game for both of these teams, and I still can't figure out who the hell the Ottawa Red Blacks are? Like, with Hamilton, I think we saw improvement. We saw they looked good in spurts early on, but now they're starting to put it together week after week. The two losses they suffered since Labor Day, one came in a squeaker in a game they probably should have won, but we won't get into that. The other came when the defense scored like three touchdowns. If the offense did anything, if they had Brandon Banks, that could be a completely different game. I feel like the Ticats, even though these two teams share the same record, I look at the Ticats and I see a team that there's confidence in. I look at Ottawa and I just don't know what to think. And this has been my problem with them going on 3 years now. Since that miraculous season they had in 2015, where they went to the Grey Cup for the first time, and then they win the Grey Cup the next year under 500, and then last year they're under 500. Like, I just cannot get a grasp of this squad to save my life. Like you mentioned, Trevor Harris's inconsistency, the offense's inconsistency. Like, I don't know what to think of Ottawa, and it's like week to week, you don't know what you're going to get with them. Like, we made the Forrest Gump joke, but that's not untrue about this team. Like, I can't make hide nor tails of this Ottawa team.
No, neither can either. I would have said the same thing about Hamilton a couple of weeks ago, but I think they found their identity. I think that they've proven that they are effective offensively. They're pretty damn good on the defensive side of the ball. But yeah, Ottawa's just, you know, they come into Edmonton. Edmonton's been slumping. You know, it's a huge game for Ottawa, and they don't really play that well last weekend. So
well, even in that game, like the first half, it's like, oh, I'm watching the game. I'm like, well, thanks for nothing, Edmonton, because Ottawa's going up and down the field. They're getting points. They were leading at halftime, and then nothing in the second half. I think Trevor Harris had less than like 70 yards passing in the second half. They don't give William Powell the ball to run with, and he's the league's leading rusher. Like, in a single game, they look like two completely different teams. And this is what the Ticats kind of look like. Do you remember that game against Saskatchewan that was in Hamilton? They were leading like 20-7 at halftime, and it's like, okay, yes, they had the heartbreaker in Saskatchewan 2 weeks before. Then they had the bye week. They've come back, and they've figured it out. And then they completely crapped the bed in the second half, and the Riders ran away with it. That happened to the Ticats in week six. That shouldn't be happening to teams this late in the season. We're in, what, week 19? You should know who you are, and I don't know if Ottawa knows who they are, because I sure as hell don't know who they are.
They're a team that could be, you know, they could win the Grey Cup. They could.
For sure.
I don't think, I don't, you know, anyone's in the playoffs could win the Grey Cup, but it'd be a team where it's like, oh, they won the Grey Cup, but they didn't feel like a championship team all year long. Well, they won the Grey Cup. It was kind of like Toronto last year. So these two games we're gonna find out who they are pretty quickly, because Hamilton is going to come in strong, and they're going to give it their all. So if Ottawa's a good team, we're going to find out in the next 2 weeks.
All right, so now I have the unenviable task of telling everyone why the team we love is going to lose this game. And, Mike, you are once again a son of a bitch who stole one of my points, and that was that good defenses have given the Ticats fits this year. The Ticats offense, or the Ticats in general, are averaging 29.4 points per game this year. Against teams that I think have the best defenses in the league, and that's Calgary, Saskatchewan, and Ottawa, and I'm not obviously not counting Hamilton's defense, they've averaged 18 points in five games against those three teams. And in two of those games, the Ryder game in week four and Calgary in week 14, the offense did not score a single touchdown. The Ticats are going to find a way to beat Ottawa in this one, and again in a week, they're going to have to get the ball in the end zone. I know that sounds like duh, but good defense have given this team some trouble. And secondly, Hamilton's record, 8-7, but versus above 500 teams, not great. The Ticats have just four wins against teams who are at or above 500 this season. Winnipeg, who they beat in week three, Edmonton, who they beat twice in weeks two and weeks 11, and BC, who they beat in week 16. Conversely, they have lost seven times against teams who are at or above 500, twice to Calgary in week one and week 14, twice to Saskatchewan in weeks four and six, once to Ottawa in week seven, once to Winnipeg in week nine, and of course, the collapse in BC in week 15. So the Ticats, for as good as they've looked and for as high on them as we are right now, they haven't really shown that they can hang with some of these better teams. So they're going to have to in the next 2 weeks. And they have, like you said to start, they have to win these two. They win these two, they clinch first in the East, and they got a bye to the East final. But you can't win two unless you win one. So I really hope that, you know, the team that we've seen sort of stumble against better teams and against better defense is not the one we see in this one. I don't want to tell people, I didn't want to do this, but that's what we do. So that's why I think the Ticats are going to have a hard time in this one, pal.
Yeah, you make some good points. And, you know, BC and Ottawa are good defense. They're not like top two in the league. I'd put that Calgary, Saskatchewan, Hamilton top three. You know, you can change them in and out, whatever places you want to put them in. But yeah, they haven't beat Calgary. They haven't beat Saskatchewan, which in my opinion, besides Hamilton, are the best two defenses in the league. But Ottawa and BC are in the mix there too. So if they can, you know, roll off two wins against Ottawa, which is coached by Noel Thorpe, who has been one of the best in the league for many, many years now, I'll have some more confidence. But we're not going to be able to know if we can beat, you know, Calgary, Saskatchewan, unless we make it to the Grey Cup. And, you know, I'm going to guess that one of those two teams will be the Western, although Saskatchewan looked like total crap against Winnipeg this weekend. So I don't know. But to roll off two wins against Ottawa, a top-notch defense would be very encouraging.
So this is a big game for the Ticats. And we got some big games coming up over the next couple of weeks. And I'm not just talking about the Ticats here, Mike, but I'm talking about all around this league. That West playoff race, that's going to be a doozy.
Phenomenal.
There are three teams fighting for two playoff spots, and there's going to be a really good football team that is not going to make the playoffs this year. I think, and especially over the last couple of weeks, have you seen Calgary stumble? I feel like it's less – it used to be there's Calgary at the top, there's Toronto and Montreal at the bottom, and then there's everyone else in the middle. I now think it's Montreal and Toronto at the bottom and everyone else. I think any of these seven teams left, one of which will not make the playoffs, could win the Grey Cup. And there's lots still left to be decided, and I think it's going to be a fun end to the regular season, and I think it's going to be a fun playoffs. I think this has been one of the – maybe not from like a game-by-game standpoint, but based on how close everyone is and how clustered up this league is this year, I think this has been one of the better seasons of the CFL in the last little while.
Yeah, usually the last couple of weeks, you know, there's maybe one or two big games, you know, a couple spots that need to be decided still. But you're right. I mean, the whole West Division is still wide open. We're still battling for first in the East. There's a lot of really intriguing games coming up, and I'm looking forward to the last three weeks of the season here.
Should be a lot of fun. So that was Podski Wee Wee for this week. I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.